I think this is a very important breakout move, and that the way it happened is likely to be a longer lasting trend. Because if you look at the last 20 years or even 40 years, the gold market peaked out in 1980, and then we dropped and so forth. And each time the market strengthened, we had huge retail participation. In other words, the retail clients, they jumped into the market. This has not happened this time around.
Dr. Mark Faber, how's it going?
Everything is fine, and thank you very much for conducting this interview. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to have you on. I wanted to start out with, we've had a good, since I've last had you on, we've had a really good breakout in the gold market, and now recently the silver market has followed. What are they telling us here?
Well, in general, I think that asset markets, which have continued to go up, and more recently gold, silver, and platinum, and also other commodities, they're telling us that there is still plenty of liquidity. In other words, it is possible that the Fed increased interest rates, but that money hasn't really become very tight. And I want to repeat here something that I have expressed in the past. Inflation is a very unusual complex because it doesn't touch all members of society equally. In other words, if you own a commercial property and your interest rates go up substantially, suddenly, as it has happened since 2020, then you may have a problem because there is a glut of commercial properties. And with the rise in interest rates, the property value has obviously declined substantially. In some cases, actually, astoundingly. I mean, there are properties that sell for less than half of what they sold in 2018, 2015, and so forth. I have many examples and pictures of these buildings. Actually, at this price, I was kind of myself interested to buy some because I think they're rather low. But you never know how society changes and whether it's permanent that people will not go and work in offices anymore and just stay home. And at the same time, there is plenty of liquidity. If you look at the meme stocks that just suddenly rebounded strongly in the last few weeks. And other stocks like semiconductors or NVIDIA that keeps on going up, then you can't talk about tight liquidity. And also, you and I, we may be in a different position. The household in America, the typical household has household debts, mortgage debts, and then it depends, you know, how these mortgages are structured. Are these fixed rate mortgages? In the US, you can fix them, I think, for about 15 years. In Canada, you can't. And in Switzerland, the maximum you can fix a mortgage is like 5 years. After they become variable mortgages. So the people that have variable mortgages, they are hurt in their income in real terms, because suddenly they have to pay much higher mortgages and so forth and so on. The point is simply the rise in precious metals. To me and to other people, it may suggest something different, but to me, it suggests that actually the rate of inflation that we have is much higher than what the statistics indicate, the statistics that are published by the government. Because the government has every interest to keep interest rates as low as possible because they themselves suffer under a huge debt and a huge level of liabilities arising from the unfunded debts that they have, the unfunded liabilities. So the government has an interest to cheat. And this is in the blood of politicians. Lying, cheating, and stealing. That is in their DNA. So they will never publish the true rate of inflation.
You will get no argument for me about that. In fact, I'm going to have John Williams of Shadow Stats on next week, and we're going to talk about what is the true rate of inflation.
Yes, this is a very good idea. And he has just recently published a figure that is very interesting because I've been following John Williams for the last 20, 30 years. But my impression was always that he exaggerated a little bit with the rate of price increases that he indicated. In other words, they were usually twice as high as what the government published. But more recently, I think that his figures reflect the reality more than what the government is publishing. But he published a chart, which I think is very important, and you can ask him at the time about it. He published a chart of the gold price and his inflation rate. And the gold chart and his inflation rate, the rate of ascendancy coincides precisely. It's very interesting. So I think the gold market and people who buy gold, they smell, and the market is smarter than politicians and fund managers and so forth. The market is what the market is. It goes up. There's a reason. Usually it's liquidity, but sometimes there are other reasons that the market goes up. Or sometimes the market goes down. It's sometimes tight liquidity, but there can also be other reasons. But John Williams' chart, the way his inflation figures go up, along with the gold price, is amazing.
Yeah, I'm writing
down. I think the question for investors is this a genuine breakout move of gold, silver, platinum on the upside? Or is it a fake move? We have in the market every day, some stocks break down. The next day, they reverse. And some stocks move up strongly. The next day, they reverse. It's a very nervous market in a way.
Well, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think this gold move and silver move is an actual breakout, or do you think it's a fake?
No. I think this is a very important breakout move, and that the way it happened is likely to be a longer lasting trend. Because if you look at the last 20 years or even 40 years, the gold market peaked out in 1980 and then we dropped and so forth. And each time the market strengthened, we had huge retail participation. In other words, the retail clients, they jumped into the market. This has not happened this time around.
Got it.
Part of the reason is, of course, we have a new generation of investors, whereas my generation would understand that investing can be long-term, that, you know, you can hold an investment for many, many years, and as a result of a good choice of company or a good location of real estate, that this would be a rewarding investment in the long run. Generation Z is smarter than we are. They want overnight rewards by buying Bitcoins and Solana and God knows what other cryptos. And they're all experts on this overnight.
Right. You brought up a couple things I want to get back to. You brought up liquidity. How would the Fed create liquidity without lowering interest rates? In fact, how do they create liquidity? And even though interest rates continue to rise or have continued to rise?
Well, yeah, this is a very good question because, and I may have mentioned this before, if you go to high inflation economies like Turkey or Argentina, interest rates are very high and there's still plenty of liquidity.
Right.
I would define tight liquidity as a liquidity condition whereby interest rates on, say, 10-year bonds would be substantially higher than the rate of inflation. So let's look for a minute at the current yield on 10-year bonds. It's a little bit above 4%. I will give you the precise figure. My Bloomberg here. At the present time, the 10 years is at, say, in the US at 4.34%, in Japan at 1%, in brilliant Switzerland at 0.763%, and so forth. But let's focus on the US at 4.34%. Are you sure that inflation is 4.34% or higher or lower? I would guess that your cost of living are going up at the present time in Canada and the US and wherever you are at approximately 6 to 7% per annum. But this is on top of a, say, 20% increase that people experienced between 2019, in other words, pre-COVID and post-COVID. Yes. We never had deflation where prices came down. It's just that the rate of increase has slowed down, but it's still going up. And if you look at home prices, for me, this is the most amazing thing because it contradicts everything I learned when I first went to university and studied the theories. I still have the books that we have to study in those days. This was the Bible of economics. Samuelson's economic book. we had it in German. This was the Bible. Everybody was reading. Volkswirtschaftslehre, Samuelson. I passed my exams with this. According to Samuelson and the Keynesian, it's basically when prices go up, demand will diminish, and then prices will come down. But in the case of housing in the US, prices have gone up, then they collapsed after 2008. But the Fed members didn't learn a lesson. No, they produced a second, much larger housing bubble. And this time, the disaster is the affordability. Affordability of homes in the US is at an all-time low. Young people can't buy homes. Lots of people, they own homes already, so they benefit. This is the wealth effect. But the ones that don't own homes, they have to rent. Now, since there's so many people that need to rent, the rents are going up. And it's fueling inflation. But the government, they overlook this fact and so forth. But this is, for many families, is a big problem, the cost of housing.
So I guess that leads to the question that, is where does this go? I mean, does it keep on going up? Are we experiencing a Fed printing until the end? Liquidity keep on going? Because this seems to be obviously fueled by liquidity.
Look, I'm not a politician. And I'm not lying. Nobody knows exactly where it goes, except the politicians. They know exactly where it goes. It will get better and better and so forth. The reality is the conditions are so bad that a favorable outcome is out of the question. Out of the question. Now, we can decide what is the least bad option. That is in politics usually the case. You vote for someone who is the least
evil,
corrupt individual, the least dishonest, corrupted, and so on. And in this situation, in my view, if you and I go to the people and say, look, the only way out is we have to increase taxation and cut government expenditures, you and I will never have a chance to be elected anywhere. This is the reality.
Right.
A possibility is default. But default in a system such as we have, which involves, gigantic transfer payments to retirees. Now go and reduce the pensions of the police officers that are retired or of the military, the army. Or tell the retirees, all the retirees, now your pension is 30% lower. It would be a disaster. It's not possible, actually. So what you do is essentially you print money. The printing of money is a tax because it produces inflation.
Right.
And you asked before, when is actually money tight? Money would be tight when asset prices fall or no longer go up and real wages go up more than the rate of inflation. That, in my view, would be a sign of tightness, but it's not going to happen. I think the government will make sure that the illusion of wealth is maintained, because people... I was thinking the other day, and maybe your readers have an answer, because I don't have it. If you look at cryptocurrencies, should we include them as in the monetary mass? Are they money? The crypto people will tell you a Bitcoin is money, and it has functions of money in the sense it's a sort of a store of value, and it's a unit of account. So a condition is fulfilled to be money. Is it a good accounting unit? I'm not sure, because if you value your assets in bitcoins, they've all collapsed, unless you had everything in bitcoins, you understand? So the accounting unit side, I'm not so convinced, but otherwise it could be perceived as money. And I'm not sure central bankers know this exactly either, whether it should be included in the money supply or not.
Right. Let's pivot a little bit, talk about gold. And again, we talked about the breakout in gold. Is part of that is due to central bank buying. And I want you to comment about that, because it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, the average person's not buying like the central banks are. And then also, it seems like the banks in the East are the ones that are buying, not the banks in the West. Yes.
Actually, I have to laugh at this question because I'm always so critical about central bankers. In the back of my mind, I feel if the dumb central bankers are buying something, it would be a good time to sell. Because the public, in my opinion, would seem to be more intelligent than the academics at central bank. But I think there's another reason for the buying. And this is very important for Westerners to understand. The West essentially as a bloc, economic and political bloc, consists of the leader, the US, and then the vassals, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and to some extent Japan. Then we have the rest of the world that we could call the BRICS countries and associate countries. These countries are very powerful and big now economically. India has overtaken Britain as the fifth largest economy in the world, has over 1 billion people, young people, and so forth. China is important. China produces, has the largest industrial production by far in the world. It produces more cement than the rest of the world combined, and so forth and so on. This rest of the world, they have a very different view of the world than the Western power that until recently still lived in the kind of idea or ideology of neo-colonialism. You look at France, they had all sorts of agreements with African countries and so forth that were not necessarily to the advantage of the African countries, as you can imagine. And this is now coming apart. The difficulty is to decide how will it come apart peacefully and gradually, or will the superpower that controlled the world essentially post-Second World War, namely the US, resent this diminished role in world affairs and go to war over this relative decline? That is a big question. And my view is, if you look at the people who are in the State Department and the so-called neocons in America, who are warmongers, the Wolfowitz school of the geopolitics, you know, you can't afford to let another country become important geopolitically and military. You have to destroy them before they get to that stage. That will create tensions. And then the countries, they realize everything the US says is against China. Everything the US says is against Modi in India. And everything that the US says is against Putin. Now, these countries have large surpluses because of their trade and so forth. So their reserves accumulate. And where do these people want to have their reserves? All in US dollars. And then their assets are suddenly frozen. No, thank you. Maybe they would economically prefer to have it in US dollars because they would get now 5% on the dollars. But from a strategic point of view, and from a safety point of view, they want gold and deliver it into their own countries, not gold at the Fed in New York. You would have to be brain damaged to leave your assets at the Fed in America.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's interesting about gold, though, we've been on this tear, and it's been over $2,000 now for 6 months, and it's been elevated probably, I mean, significantly for the past 24 months. Why haven't the gold stocks followed? And that's my first question. And the my second question is, do you see deep value in them? I see incredible value in them, but it doesn't seem like anybody's listening.
Well, maybe we have the wrong glasses. Maybe we see the wrong thing. But I agree with you. I mean, if you don't believe me, take a chart and compare the GDX, the gold ETF, gold miner ETF, and compare it to the S&P 500. Or take the GDX, the gold mining ETF, and compare it to the physical price of gold and silver and so forth. The mining stocks are unbelievably depressed, but they were even more depressed, say, 3 months ago. Many have already doubled from their lows, and or are up 50%. Now, yesterday was a disastrous day for the gold miners. Who knows why? I think the gold price near term is probably a bit overbought. But as I said, for the last 40 years, I do not value my gold. I only look at the weight. And I buy every month. I never sell gold. I just keep on accumulating. Now, is it possible that I have a bit more allocated to silver or platinum and less to gold? That could be the case. But in general, I think as, I'm not saying a responsible individual, but someone who is cautious and someone who distrusts the people that run the central banks. I distrust them with all my heart. Because I also know their background and so forth. They're academics and they are essentially working with the government, and the government has puts pressure on them to do things. But anyway, I would hold it, let's put it this way. If we have a discussion and you and I would discuss about the US dollar, is it strong? Is it going to be weak and so forth? And then I say to you, okay, what would you prefer to US dollars? The yen, the euro, the Singapore dollar, the Chinese yuan, or the Brazilian real or Mexican peso, or God knows what? I would say there is one currency that stands out as the most steady, and that is gold, silver, and platinum. That I would hold as a currency alternative to the US dollar. The other currencies are not much better, and most of them are worse.
Right.
The ECB is a money printer par excellence, and it is run by a complete illiterate in economics.
Yeah.
Actually, Miss Lagarde fits very well with Miss Yellen. Both of them are largely illiterate, economically speaking. I don't think they read Hayek. I don't think they read Friedman. I don't think they read Ludwig von Mises and so forth, who are important economists. I don't think they read Schumpeter.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Now, I wasn't going to ask you this, but I just thought of it. Do you believe, like, since we're talking about currencies, Japan's been trying to prop up the yen here for the last few months, it seems like. What are your thoughts on that? And do you see an end to the yen carry trade?
Again, if anything you ask me about the future, I'm very cautious because...
Sure.
Yes, the Bank of Japan could take measures to strengthen the yen. But in my view, they would have to take measures. The yen, the 10-year bond yield on the Japanese JGBs is 1%. In the US, it's over 4%. So I, as a fund manager, I look 10 years out. I think the yen would have to be very strong to beat the interest advantage I have in US bonds.
Got it. Okay.
But it could happen. But the problem is in Japan, is like in the US, if the government increases interest rates, the interest payments on the debt soar. In the US, the debt payments now, the interest alone, is about $1 trillion a year. And that figure is not going to come down. It will go up. Question is, at what kind of a speed?
Right.
Because the debt will not go down. The debt will keep on going up because of the deficits.
Right. Right.
And in Japan, the situation is even worse. If they really increase interest rates, say, in my view, interest rates in Japan should be at 2%, then the interest on the government debt will eat up essentially all tax revenues.
Right. You as a fund manager, obviously you're always looking for value. Where do you see, or are you looking for value now?
I personally think the most compelling value is in resource stocks. And but this is disputed by the market. The market seems to think that there is value in the FANG-related stocks, in semiconductors, because they keep on going up, whereas the value stocks have outperformed the growth stocks over the last 6 months, but not by much. It's not yet conclusive evidence that they will outperform in the long run. But there's one point I feel that is important in this discussion. The foreign markets have underperformed the US until recently. Now, over the last 12 months, European markets have outperformed the US. And over the last 3 months, some, not all, but some emerging markets have outperformed the US. I think we are at the juncture where indexing will become unattractive. The S&P is driven, the value of the S&P is driven largely by 20 stocks or so.
Right. Or
the Magnificent Seven, they call them. But altogether is maybe 10, 20 stocks. And those stocks have very high valuations. And investors have very high expectations. I do not think that these expectations will be met. And then there are stocks where investors have very low expectations. I would include the miners in that category. But here I need to add one problem, and this is government regulation. The government comes again and again with regulations or penalizes companies and so forth. So the environment is not particularly favorable for the corporate sector going forward. And the value, if you talk about value aside from miners, I think there's some value in utilities. Not great, but some. There's probably some value emerging in commercial buildings, commercial real estate, because they're very depressed. I mean, you can buy things at a huge discount to asset value. And Hong Kong shares and Chinese shares are cheap. I mean, I think it's a good time to build up. I already have a portfolio of Hong Kong and Chinese shares. But for someone who has no exposure, I think it's a good time to build up a portfolio.
Got it. Okay. Well, any, Dr. Faber, thank you so much for coming on. Any final thoughts we have? And what I mean by final, I'd like to have you on again as you come on every 3 months or so, that you see happening, final thoughts you see happening over the next 3 months or so?
I have to say, I'm not very optimistic about the performance of assets. I think the Fed will cut rates, you know, or move into that direction, and they will not increase rates. But the danger of cutting rates is that it will fuel higher inflation rates again going forward. I mean, I think the economy is not doing well, but when I go and travel and go out, I see that everybody would like to increase prices. And I actually see some businesses, they increase prices because the demand is not there. It's very funny. I mean, I sometimes feel I keep this as a museum piece, but the theory I should throw away. But it's very important in a money printing environment. Many things change. It's The best book is The Economics of Inflation by Bresciano Turonia. Maybe I showed it to you before, but it's a very good book to understand inflation and the impact on the workers and the impact on asset markets and the impact on the currency. I think in the US, the dollar one day will go down massively, but it may not go down massively against the Zimbabwe dollar. That it may go down massively against precious metals. And this is what I think is happening now.
Got it. Well, Dr. Mark Faber, editor and publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report and fund manager, you are a hero of mine. I've listened and watched you for over 40 years, it seems like.
This is very kind of you, but you wasted your time for 40 years.
I want to thank you so much to have you on, and we'll have you on again really soon.
Well, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
And to your viewers, all the best.
Thank you.